Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Well, it's been called that, and rightly so, the debacle that is Afghanistan. And it continues to unfold, if not unravel, at the hands of what many would argue is one of the most inept and dangerous administrations in our nation's history. My guest this hour has recently offered some salient insights into a couple of his filings, foreign desk columnist for The Washington Times. Cliff May is founder and president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. I'll give you a couple of websites real quick, defenddemocracy.org and washingtontimes.com. Cliff, always great to have you on the show. Take us first, if you would, to your first column, September 7th, after 29/11 anniversaries, the sleeping giant nods off again, and you share some odd observations that are really interesting across that 20-year span. Walk us through some of that, if you would.
Well, thank you. I mean, it occurred to me as we were approaching this 20th anniversary that I've been writing a column every year on the anniversary. So that's a lot of time and a lot of columns. And I kind of looked back through them to see what I had written. And I realized that, for example, the first column I wrote on the first anniversary of 9/11, made about an ABC radio show I had been on with Bianca Jagger. For some of your younger readers, Bianca Jagger was Mick Jagger, the rock singer's wife, and she was identified as an activist. And there was also Terry Waite, an Anglican Church envoy. And I was sort of, I'd say, surprised and dismayed that neither of them seemed to have much sympathy for what the U.S. had suffered on 9/11. Again, younger people may not remember, and I'm not sure that the various things in the media accurately make clear what happened when people, including people who I knew or when the World Trade Towers were hit by us by suicide bombers in a passenger plane, the people in the building who survived that first hit, a lot of them either had to jump or allow themselves to be burned to death. I mean, it was just a terrible thing. And of course, both buildings eventually came down, and another passenger plane slammed into the Pentagon, and the third one did not reach its target, which would have been the White House or the Capitol, because the passengers on board at that point understood what was going on and they rebelled, and the plane crashed instead, and they sacrificed themselves to save a lot of lives. Anyway, to get back to the point, Bianca Jagger, rather than being sympathetic, she accused the Bush administration of killing thousands of innocent Afghans and failing to pay reparations to them. And then I go on a little bit. The following year, I wrote a column, and actually I praised John Kerry, who was then a presidential candidate, for calling the attacks of 9/11 our generation's Pearl Harbor. But I was a little bit dubious that he grasped the implication of that. After Pearl Harbor, there's a quote attributed to the Japanese admiral who was ordered to undertake that mission against the U.S., and he feared that he had awakened a sleeping giant in the U.S. and filled that giant, Americans, with a terrible resolve that was going to cost them the war, that it was the worst strategic error they could possibly make, was hitting Pearl Harbor. And I wasn't sure from hearing Kerry and other people that we were a sleeping giant that had yet been awakened, and we had a terrible resolve and understood what the jihadis intended for us and for the world and for moderate Muslims and all and many other people, and that we were going to fight back properly. Maybe we would. And also, and this was pretty early on for me to kind of recognize this, I understood this was going to be a long war. By the way, FDD has a journal. It's a little bit wonky, but it's very well done, called the Long War Journal, because the jihad, we knew, was not going to end anytime soon. And so I posed the question, well, President Roosevelt had been asked after Pearl Harbor, how long would we be at war with the Axis powers? My guess is he would have said, well, for the duration. In other words, as long as it takes, that's how long. And I wasn't sure we had that resolve. Anyway, I'll mention one more about that. By 2004, I was already somewhat lamenting that editors of the Reuters news agencies agency had begun asserting that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Mm. Oh, we can't tell. Maybe the people who are killing people in America on 9/11, people who are coming across and strapped with bombs in Israel, maybe these are freedom fighters. Who are we to judge? So anyhow, I'm happy to talk on more, but I go on through not all the columns, but through many and many of the columns I wrote over the years, and look at the various things that concern me, points I was making, arguments that I tried to put forward.
Well, on that note, and you're right, there's so much more to the column, folks. You want to check it out? You should really, at Washington Times, because it's much more in depth than what we have time to cover. But I'm glad you highlighted some of those, and of course, it went on from there. But in that context, Cliff, from your own considered and well-informed perspective through the years, did we handle it at all adroitly, properly, even during the Bush-Obama years, which, of course, will lead us to Afghanistan in a moment? But it seems to me that, in my view at least, the Bush administration was highly compromised by, I'll say, softness on radical Islam and not a wanting to offend anybody, including well-meaning, law-abiding Muslims here in our own country. They really could not. They could not call reality what it was and what it is in that regard in terms of the war on terror. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Bush administration got what we did better. And they saw there was a real need for a fight. In 2006, my column was on the Bush administration's national strategy for combating terrorism, which declared that the U.S. would kill and capture terrorists and deny safe haven or control of any nation and prevent them from getting access to WMD. But terrorism is a way that the jihadis fight, the way one of our enemies fight. But it's not the enemy in and of itself, and that's a purposeful confusion for exactly the reason I think that you outlined, which is where there was a great fear we would offend Muslims. It's not that hard to explain and not that hard to understand. I know a lot of sophisticated Muslims. Now, I have quite a few working for me in my think tank. You don't have to walk on eggshells here. They know that the jihadis have a 7th century view of Islam as a warrior religion. The people, the Taliban, Al Qaeda, they want to go back to that. Plenty of Muslims do not want to go back to the seventh century. But the jihad that is being waged now is a continuation of the jihad that began 1,400 years ago. And this war does go on a long time. I mean, just to give you one example, the Islamic armies that sprang out of Arabia very quickly conquered all of North Africa and went into Spain. That's 711. Well, how long were Christians and Islamic forces fighting each other in Spain? Well, everyone knows the answer to this, right? The Muslim forces were expelled in 1492. Mm-hmm. But they had arrived in 700, so that went on for 700 years. But it goes on long after that. You know, I'll mention something that people don't know, and it's astonishing to me that they don't, and they didn't see it on the 20th anniversary, and that is, what's the likely reason that Osama bin Laden chose September 11th for the date of this? And we don't know this for sure, but it's probably likely. And it's because on September 11th, 1683, Islamic armies had invaded Europe and were defeated, turned away at the gates of Vienna. And this was meant to be an attempt to say we're resuming that war. People didn't quite understand that. Anyhow, I go on and talk about, and this gets to what you're talking about, the idea that, oh, we're fighting forever wars. We can't do that. We have to end these endless wars, and we can end endless wars not by defeating our enemy, not by frustrating their ambitions. No, we just have to stop fighting. That'll end these endless wars. That'll end these forever wars. We just have to stop fighting. And that, of course, is the view of a lot of people on the left and a lot of people, I would argue, on the neo-isolationist right as well, who don't seem to understand that the jihad is a war that's been going on for 1,400 years, and it will continue. Now, there was a break. There was a hiatus. What happened at the end of World War I? Again, I don't know if people know their history. Well, the Ottoman Empire had sided with the Germans. And as a result of that, the Ottoman Empire, which was also a caliphate, the last important caliphate, collapsed. And a lot of people thought, optimistically, that's the end of Islamic empires and caliphates that want to rule the world and destroy what they call the Crusaders, the Zionists, and other, as they see it, enemies of Islam. But that's not the way the jihadis see it. They want to resume, to resurrect a caliphate. That was what the Islamic State did after the precipitous pullout of all our troops from Iraq by President Obama in 2011. That didn't end that endless war. It sparked the Islamic State, which was an offshoot of al-Qaeda. And, of course, that's what's going on right now, this precipitous and incompetent sudden withdrawal from Afghanistan, where we had something like 2,500 troops, along with several thousand NATO forces as well, done in a way that was just stunningly incompetent, leaving behind Americans, leaving behind Afghans who were siding with us against al-Qaeda and the Taliban, leaving our NATO allies in the lurch in terms of getting their own forces out. I mean, you and I may think, okay, well, you know, this happened because Biden and his advisors were incompetent, but there are millions of people around the world who are going to say this happened because Allah gives victory on the battlefield, and he chose to give victory to the Taliban and al-Qaeda against the Crusader Americans.
And what we have as a result, and it's far from over, is what you headlined your second article. We'll have to have you back to talk more about that as well. Taliban calls the shots, and as America's humiliation continues. So we are right now quagmired in an unresolvable situation, in that we have empowered the very people we went there to defeat, and we've reestablished them in leadership.
Yes, what we just had was an unconditional surrender to a rabble of jihadis, exactly what you would not have wanted or expected 20 years ago. It's probably the worst possible outcome, and at a time when China is challenging us as well, and we've given up a hugely important base that we had in the Indo-Pacific, including a great air base at Bagram, useful against all the jihadi groups, and there are dozens of them there in that region. And also useful against China, which, by the way, has a border with Afghanistan.
Well, on that note, we'll break. But Cliff, let's stay on this together. Let's follow up in the near future as this whole sad scenario unfolds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, Cliff May, founder and president of a great organization called Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And their website is defenddemocracy.org. He's also the foreign desk columnist for the Washington Times. And of course, that's WashingtonTimes.com.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.